The house will come to order. Please stand if you're able, even in the gallery. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Thompson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by Rabbi James Green with Temple Beth Shalom here in Salem, guest of Representative Berger.
Eloheinu ve'elohe avotenu v'imotenu, our God and God of our ancestors, we ask your blessings for our state, for its government, for its leaders and advisors, and for all who exercise right and just authority. Grant these leaders assembled here this morning the wisdom to act in service of all the people of Oregon, that they may administer all affairs of state fairly, that peace and security, happiness and prosperity, justice and freedom may forever abide in our midst. Source of creation, bless all the inhabitants of our country and this beautiful state with your spirit. May citizens of all races and creeds form a common bond in true harmony to banish hatred and bigotry and to safeguard the ideals and free institutions that are the pride and glory of our land. Imbue into our hearts the discernment that we are all created in your image, people of all ethnic backgrounds, faith traditions, gender identities and orientations, young and old. And place into our hearts the ability to understand, to see, to hear, to learn and to teach, to keep, to do, and to uphold all that is sacred about the work of serving the people of Oregon. Help us to remember that in this state, which has been so richly blessed by the bounty of creation, that you call on all of us to be your partners in the repair and perfection of the world, to be your hands in extending help to those in need, to supporting and uplifting the strangers in our midst, as the psalmist writes, "Let the beauty of creation be upon us and the work of our hands upon us. O prosper it to the work of our hands." Bless these, our state representatives, their staffs and advisors, with the wisdom and understanding to enact laws which will benefit all Oregonians. Let them fulfill the ancient call, Tzedek, Tzedek Tirdof, Lema'an Tihyeh V'yarashta Et Ha'aretz Asher Adonai Elohecha Notein Lach. Justice, justice shall you pursue, that you may thrive and occupy the land that the Lord your God has given you. And let us say, Amen. Thank you, Representative Hunt.
Courtesies, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues, and thank you to Rabbi James Green. He is, as identified from Temple Beth Shalom in South Salem, he's fairly new to Oregon and new to our state. He was trained in Philadelphia. He moved to Salem about 10 months ago. He and his wife have one 10-month-old daughter. He actually lives in Representative Clem's district, but I'm very happy to welcome him here, and I hope you'll say hello to him. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you very much. Great to have you here. Let's move to our moment in sesquicentennial history. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Many colleagues, many of these history minutes have focused on aspects of Oregon's history to celebrate. However, it's equally, if not more important, to acknowledge those parts of our history about which we should not be so proud. Sometimes those two ideas are embodied in the same person, and we have a figure today, Walter Pierce, who I will describe based on an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by William G. Robbins. Walter Pierce's long public career extended from the 1890s to the political turmoil involving the return of Japanese Americans to their Oregon homes following the Second World War. He was one of the more enigmatic of Oregon's public officials. Voters elected him to the governor's office in 1922 with the active support of the Ku Klux Klan. At the same time, Pierce had a reputation as a liberal on issues of gender, class, public power, and progressive taxation. Although his 1922 run for governor was rooted in issues of public power, passing a state income tax and reforestation, Pierce revealed his lifelong nativism, tacitly supporting the Klan and backing the anti-Catholic compulsory school bill, a measure aimed directly at parochial schools. Oregon's largely homogenous ethnic and religious voters approved the measure, but the Oregon Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional, a decision upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. Pierce also supported the Alien Property Act, a 1923 law directed at immigrant Japanese in Portland and the Hood River Valley that prohibited aliens from owning or leasing land. He was defeated for governor's office in 1926 and returned to his northeastern Oregon ranch. In 1928, he lost a race for congressman from the 2nd District, but tried again and was successful in the Franklin Roosevelt landslide of 1932. Walter Pierce served 10 years in the U.S. House of Representatives and proved himself a firm believer in New Deal policies. After his congressional defeat in 1942, Walter Pierce retired to his new home near Salem, where he died in 1954 at the age of 91.
Further courtesies, Representative Thompson. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please help me welcome the volunteers and coalition leaders from the Tobacco-Free Coalition of Oregon for Tobacco Prevention Day. The coalition is made up of several local and national health organizations, including the American Lung Association, the American Heart Association, the Northwest Health Foundation, Upstream Public Health, the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, Community Health Partnerships, Oregon Dental Association, Oregon Nurses Association, and Oregon Public Health Association. These volunteers are on the front lines helping Oregonians live happy and healthy lives. They will be in the building all day today to talk with us about the importance of tobacco prevention and funding for the tobacco prevention education program. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope that you'll help me welcome the seniors and people with disabilities who are here today to participate in the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disability. That's the reason I say 04AD Day, and that's 04AD today is at the Capitol. Over 150 seniors, people with disabilities, and advocates are in the building to support the preservation of Oregon Project Independence and strengthening home and community-based care options and prevention and early intervention services for all seniors and people with disabilities. I'd like to extend my personal greeting, if I can find them, to the Oregon Cascade West Council of Governments Seniors and Disability Services. They represent my home county of Lincoln County. And those seniors boarded the bus this morning very, very early, and I'm not even sure if they've made it into the building yet. But I also want to, there's some of them up there. I also want to acknowledge a group of OPI, Oregon Project Independence clients, who've made the trip here today to share what this program has meant to them and to help us have a better understanding of just how broad and far-reaching those program services can be. So I encourage each of you to take a moment to meet with these individuals. Thank you all for making the trip and your willingness to participate in the political process, and welcome to your Capitol.
Thank you, Representative, for welcoming all of those advocates from all of our districts and doing that on behalf of all of us. Welcome to your Capitol. Glad to have you here. Further courtesies, Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I'd like to welcome and have colleagues have you welcome to the House students and teachers who are visiting here from the Realms Academy, which stands for the Rimrock Expeditionary Alternative Learning Middle School in Bend. They're up in the back gallery. Wave. Yeah, there you go. And they are here with teachers and parents. They're in a combined learning with the Community Service Project. They're 6th and 7th graders who have been involved in a unit on studying poverty and homelessness. And they've come to the Capitol today to review bills, how a bill gets to be a law, and to relate the issues they've been studying to how we do business here. And they met this morning with myself and Representative Barton. Thank you very much. And they were an inquisitive, well-informed group.
Welcome to your Capitol. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like you to welcome, or join me in welcoming, Elders in Action. Would you stand if you were able, if you're here today with Elders in Action? Elders in Action, today is their lobby day, and you should be hearing from many of them. It's a difficult time, and we really appreciate your coming. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Great to have you all here. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like first to introduce three honorary pages. They are from the Beverly Cleary School again at Fernwood Campus. And I'd like first to introduce Liam Moran. Liam, would you please stand? Liam is 14 years old. He's in the eighth grade. His passion is soccer, and he would like someday to be an engineer. Thank you, Liam. Our second honorary page is Taylor Rose. Taylor, would you please stand? Taylor is 14. He's in the eighth grade. Also at Beverly Cleary Fernwood School, and his interests are math and PE and soccer. And he would like someday to be a business owner, preferably a business that makes money. Thank you. And then finally, Carson Trexler, would you please stand? Carson is 14 in the eighth grade, and Carson's passion is carnivorous plants. He is a member of the International Society of Carnivorous Plants, and his career goal, as you can imagine, is horticulture. I assume both carnivorous and vegetarian. Welcome, and please extend courtesy to these pages. And, Mr. Speaker, with your indulgence, while I have the microphone, I'd also like, colleagues, you to extend courtesies to a number of students and staff from Portland Community College who are in the gallery. Portland Community College, as you know, educates more than 65,000 Oregonians each year. That's more than all of the OUS schools combined. And these are students of all ages who have a passion for improving their lives. And I would ask you to extend courtesies and encourage them in their pursuit of education. Thank you, colleagues.
Welcome. Great to have you here. Representative Cannon.
I also have the honor of introducing three of our honorary pages, so please stand when I introduce you. Brian Whitney from Beverly Cleary Fernwood School, an eighth grader, as are his classmates. Activities and interests include chess, kung fu, and reading, and career goals include accounting or marine biology. Thank you, Brian. Anna Learn, a classmate, Fernwood Beverly Cleary School. Activities and interests include five types of dance, and career goals include possible work in international aid, such as Peace Corps. Thank you, Anna. And another Anna from Beverly Cleary School, Anna Carlin. Activities, interests include band, music production class, kung fu, and mock trials. Career goals include being a musician, graphic designer, or something in the legal system. Welcome to the Oregon House.
And Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, would like to welcome some honorary pages. Adam, could you please rise? The first one is Adam Lawler. He's from Beverly Cleary Fernwood School as well. He's interested in student leadership team, club soccer. He likes rock and roll. His favorite band is AC/DC. Next up is Austin Schaff. Austin is also from Beverly Cleary Fernwood. He is interested in soccer, wants to be an accountant, lawyer, or architect, likes hip-hop. His favorite band is T.I. Welcome to your capital.
Any further courtesies? The clerk will now open the voting system to verify the presence of a quorum. We have excused today for the joint Ways and Means hearings that are happening on the road. Excused Representatives Buckley, David Edwards, Galizio, Garrard, Gilman, Jensen, Comp, Nathanson, and Richardson. All other members are present. Messages from the Governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bill 2303, 2762, Senate Bills 560, 610, 623, 689, 745, 748, 901, 929, 543, and 570. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed House Bill 2201, 2466, and 2275.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3488 relating to Oregon Redistricting Advisory Committee.
Bills read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2366 relating to liabilities arising from residential contractor activity. House Bill 2795 relating to diesel engines. House Bill 3451 relating to ballots. House Bill 3471 relating to inter-county adoptions of children in custody of the Department of Human Services and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time were passed to third reading. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended. This is for the purpose of trying to advance some of the House bills that have just been coming out of House committees over the last few days. You may have noticed there's been a few House bills coming out of House committees over the last few days. So for the leadership on both sides have agreed to have these bills moved up for second reading today so we can be considering them more expeditiously in the days to come. So we're not going to be voting on these today. This is just for this motion is for purposes of having second reading today. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2014, 2136, 2308, 2502, 2700, 2738, 2809, 3051, 3118, 3123, 3151, and 3367 be read for the second time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bills.
House Bill 2014 relating to school construction taxes prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2136 relating to vending machines distributing tobacco products. House Bill 2308 relating to discharge of estate fiduciary from personal liability for inheritance tax and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2502 relating to criminal procedure and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2700 relating to claims for property tax exemptions and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2738 relating to vehicles taken into custody by public bodies. House Bill 2909 relating to urban renewal plans and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3051 relating to driving while under the influence of intoxicants. House Bill 3118 relating to hiring practices of institutions of higher education. House Bill 3123 relating to release of substances by passenger vessels. House Bill 3151 relating to vehicle transfer. House Bill 3367 relating to lighting fixtures and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time were passed the third reading calendar. The consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2313 relating to definitions of legal entities. Deletes references in trust estates, trustees, and executors from certain statutory definitions of person and entity.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2313A. Those are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Olson votes aye. House Bill 2313A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 2589, relating to health benefit plan coverage of hearing aids.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2589. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you today House Bill 2589, which comes from the House Health Care Committee with bipartisan support. This bill requires that health benefit plans provide at least a $4,000 benefit for hearing aids every 48 months to children under the age of 18 with diagnosed hearing loss. Colleagues, this bill is about Oregonians like Parker McKnight. When Parker was 4, he was diagnosed with hearing loss. His parents scrimped and saved to come up with the money for hearing aids for their son, knowing the benefit that would accrue from early treatment. They raised the question, why is a minimal level of hearing aid coverage not a mandated benefit under Oregon insurance law? After all, research has shown that infants and children with hearing loss who are identified within the first 6 months of life and who receive immediate and appropriate intervention have significantly better developmental outcomes. After all, Oregon law has a mandatory newborn screening test in place in order to get kids with hearing loss treated in order to promote cognitive and social development. This bill, colleague, ensures that we fulfill the goal of our newborn screening program by ensuring that kids with diagnosed hearing loss, 82 kids in 2007, get the treatment they need right away, not when their parents can scrape together the money to pay for expensive hearing aids. Colleagues, a survey of 9 health insurance providers serving Oregon, the median increased cost for policyholders associated with this benefit, the median increased cost was just 0.07%. That's 0.07%. That's according to what the providers told DCBS. In the long run, this will save money. The sooner kids get the hearing aids they need, the less speech and language therapy they need in school. House Bill 2589 will make a big difference in the lives of Oregon kids with hearing loss and their families. I urge your aye vote and look forward to discussion. Is further discussion? Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I voted no in committee. This is an issue of health insurance mandates. It's hard to vote against the kids. I voted for my one mandate this session. Licensed professional counselors, licensed and marriage family therapists. How many mandates does Oregon have right now? 36. We're going to add another one, 37. I know there's a few more on the list. I think the question we need to ask ourselves, at what point do we say no more mandates, no more requirements, and what are we willing to give up at the opposite end? At some point, folks, we're going to have to say no. Today, I'm going to start saying no. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Colleagues, each and every potential mandate is always a compelling case. Always. There are a number of reasons why insurance rates keep rising faster than inflation, and one of them is the increasing number of state mandates passed by this legislature. When the legislature began in January, we had 36 mandates. These are health care benefits, providers, and covered persons that every insurance policy must include. So we pay for them in our policies, whether we ever use those services or not. Oregon's mandates include alcoholism treatment, breast reconstruction, drug abuse treatment, contraceptives, prosthetics, prostate cancer screening, and acupuncture, just to name a few. So my insurance policy must cover birth control pills, while my chief of staff Michelle's policy must cover prostate cancer screening. Here are some mandates from other states that Oregon doesn't have yet. Chiropractic care, marriage therapy, in vitro fertilization, morbid obesity treatment, smoking cessation, and so on. I'm sure there's some people writing these down as we speak. I have a list from the Council for Affordable Health Insurance of all the mandates that are offered in at least one state. There are dozens more, all of which very compelling: bone marrow transplants, autism, occupational therapists, dietitians, on and on. We can just keep doing this session after session. Here's the long-term problem. Each mandate by itself only raises the cost of your monthly insurance premium somewhere in the vicinity of 1% up to as high as 10% depending on the mandate. But multiply that by 36 mandates and the cumulative effect can be quite costly. In Oregon, our mandates have increased the cost of a monthly insurance premium by about 54%.
54%. The House has already passed one new mandate this year, as my colleague mentioned, and at least one more is on the way today, and there may be others. As insurance rates rise, more and more people become uninsured because they can't afford the premiums. So there is a cost to adding the mandates. Out there, as we do this, a certain number of people become uninsured. Making every Oregonian pay for every possible treatment is an extremely expensive way to achieve the goal of universal health care. Instead, we should work to create a system where every Oregonian has their own health savings account or some equivalent. In this way, each person can direct their health care dollars to the services they need and would use. We're all different, and we must each have health insurance that is tailored to our individual needs. The goal of universal access to high quality and affordable health care is absolutely achievable. However, continuing to place well-intentioned mandates on our health insurance coverage only exacerbates the problem of rising costs. Thank you, colleagues.
Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
With all due respect to my colleagues, the representative from Josephine County and Wilsonville, I get so sick and tired about hearing the complaints about mandates. If the insurance companies would do the right thing by their policyholders, we wouldn't have to pass mandates here in this legislature. And to pretend that it's these mandates that is driving up the cost of health insurance and health care out of the reach of small businesses and out of the reach of individuals is completely disingenuous. And colleagues, we're paying for this one way or the other. I mean, we either pay on the front end via an insurance vehicle like this, or we pay in increased education costs and special ed costs. And as somebody that works a lot on those issues, I can tell you that the state can use all the help that it can get in having a more proactive approach that will save money to all of us in the end. I urge your support for this bill.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Cannon, do you wish to close?
Very briefly, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the discussion. Coming back to this issue of cost, I just want to say again, according to insurers' own estimates, typical premium cost would rise by 0.07%, 0.07%. That's 70 cents on $1,000 of premium, colleagues. So, yes, I recognize there are issues related to the prioritization of mandates, the level of mandates, the effect that the accumulation of mandates may have in some incremental way on premium costs. And I look forward to working in the interim with members of the Health Care Committee and others in this body on looking holistically at this subject. But this is a practical, affordable way to get at short-term investments to save long-term educational costs. This will do a great service for Oregon families and their children with hearing loss, and I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes no. House Bill 2589, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2569, related to registration plates and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2569A. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. House Bill 2569 establishes as honorary consular corps registration plate program. This bill authorizes the department to establish a consular corps registration plate for honorary consuls. Consular plates will be issued to a resident of Oregon who has been appointed by a foreign country as an honorary consular officer to the United States. Qualifications for the plates will be further defined by administrative rule. Honorary consular plates will be issued as custom or vanity plates and will be valid for the term in which the person is acting in their official capacity of honorary consul for a foreign consulate. The plates will be issued from DMV headquarters with the person paying the custom plate fee in addition to the standard registration fees. The plates will be manufactured on the tree background with the words Official Consular Corps on the plate and a two-number configuration. The department will renew the registration of the consular plates if the term of the consul continues into a new registration period. This bill has minimal impact to the department. DMV will revise administrative rules to incorporate qualifications for the consular corps registration plate. In past years, the department has had honorary consular plate program in place, but received information from the Attorney General's office in 2008 that it no longer had statutory authority to administer the program. When that information was received, the old consular corps plate program was discontinued. This bill will give the department the statutory authority to administer an honorary consular plate program once again. The state of Oregon has recognized the volunteer service of OCC honorary consuls for over 40 years by issuing them consular license plates. Those consular license plates serve as a symbol of pride for the consul's services rendered and extended courtesy, but modest compensation for the work the consuls perform each day. Honorary consuls spend their own funds to advance this international goodwill throughout Oregon. This license plate advertises the fact that Oregon is a state with international connections. It demonstrates that Oregon is not an isolated outpost, but well integrated into the international community. Global outreach is more important than ever in today's challenging economic environment. Oregon's honorary consuls help spread this state's positive image while seeking what is best for Oregonians from these far shores. Colleagues, I hope you will support this. This is a license plate everyone can support. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2569A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2673, relating to sales of admission tickets for entertainment events.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2673A. Representative Gelser, followed by Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm going to leave it to the good representative from West Lynn to talk to you in great detail about this bill, which we like to call our Hannah Montana bill. For those of you that don't have little girls, and I know there are many of us in the room that do have little girls, you may not be aware of the singing sensation Hannah Montana, alternately known as Miley Cyrus. It's a double life kind of a thing. Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana, came to Oregon last year. Little girls all across Oregon and, in fact, across America were devastated when the concert tickets were immediately purchased by software systems, commonly known as bots. And moments later, you had to go to third-party resale distributors. And when you went there, you would find that a ticket for a little girl to go see Hannah Montana, at least in Oregon, was $2,500. $2,500. So when my children wanted to go see Hannah Montana, I did the math and pointed out to them that, A, I loved them a lot, but not that much, and secondly, that it would have been cheaper for me to take them all the way to Disneyland for several days than to drive them up to Portland to see Hannah Montana in concert. What was interesting was that because of this software, the demand was artificially inflated. So if you waited to go and purchase the tickets until the weekend before the concert, you would find that those ticket prices actually dropped back down to $100 or $150. So what this bill does is it attempts to address what is really predatory software that undermines the performers, it undermines the primary ticket distributors, and it undermines the ability for consumers to make smart, informed choices about the tickets that they're buying. I believe that the bill also represents what may be a moment in sesquicentennial Oregon history. It came to you with a unanimous do pass recommendation out of the Consumer Affairs Committee, or the Consumer Protection Committee. And with that, I will leave it to the good representative from Westland.
Representative Montana, I mean Bruin.
Tony Montana. thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, first of all, let me say thank you to the good representative from Corvallis and Philomath for her excellent work, especially in the amendment process and the meeting process that led to this, and her great enthusiasm for this bill. It actually came with just a side-by-side meeting we had during the supplemental session last year. Colleagues, this bill is simple, prohibiting the use of bot software to purchase event tickets for events held in Oregon. As was noted, bot software is sophisticated software designed to overwhelm and circumvent the normal process for the online purchase of event tickets. Bots greatly diminish an individual consumer's ability to purchase good event tickets online. Bots relegate consumers to lesser quality tickets or, as noted, much higher prices in the secondary ticket market. The best example of how bots work is, as was mentioned, with the Hannah Montana concert at the Rose Garden last year. For that event, when the tickets went on sale, bot software overwhelmed the online purchase. Individual consumers, moms and dads, could not purchase tickets for their kids because the bots purchased thousands of these Rose Garden tickets. The bots create an artificial shortage and relegate consumers to secondary markets, which, coincidentally, are supplied by the bots. Of course, the cost of these secondary tickets is greatly inflated, as was noted in the case of Hannah Montana, costing thousands of dollars, many, many times the face value of the tickets. The bots, which is short for robots, are more like, and if you recall this show, are more like the Borg from Star Trek. With no emotion and with great efficiency, the collective bots absorb and assimilate the good tickets and do with them what they will. Now, colleagues, the purchase of tickets is inherently a competitive process. There's a limited supply and a great demand for these premier events. The individual consumer at her laptop has the equivalent of a BB gun versus the shock and awe weaponry of the bots. And the MOAB, the mother of all bots, is the one used by the nation's largest ticket seller, Ticketmaster. They purchase their own tickets, then resell them at a much higher price. And I am loath but required to admit that I have personally been affected by the bots. I still, with my best friend from high school, buy those tickets to those 80 eras rock band, Van Halen, Rush, AC/DC, Sammy Hagar, you know who I'm talking about, rockers with walkers. For these concerts in Portland, you simply cannot purchase good tickets because of the bots. So, colleagues, I urge you to give the individual consumer a weapon in this tickets arm race and vote aye and support House Bill 2673. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, colleagues, I just stand to urge you to join the Consumer Protection Committee and ban the bots. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, Mr. Speaker, all of you who are parents will appreciate this. Of course, I love my children very much, and I wouldn't want them to think otherwise, having listened to my previous floor speech. It's a good bill. Support little girls. Support men in their 30s. Vote yes to ban the bots.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. House Bill 2673A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Now, colleagues, you may want to get out your third reading sheet and a pen, because I'm going to go down several bills and ask unanimous consent that these bills actually be held over. The carriers are not here, or members that want to speak on them or vote on them are not here. So the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bills 2727, 2539, 2893, 2987, 3039, and 3171 be taken from today's calendar and placed in their proper place on the Monday, May 4th, 2009 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2740, relating to Trust for Cultural Development and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2740. Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the Oregon Cultural Trust is a phenomenal organization, as we all know. It's with the trust on whose board I've served with great honor for the last several years. As you know, the trust uses tax credit contributions and monies from license plate sales to strengthen and preserve art and culture in every community in Oregon. House Bill 2740 would do three things. First, it expands the Cultural Trust Board of Directors from 7 to 11 members in order to actively involve more people on the ground raising money for Oregon's arts, heritage, and humanities. Second, during the February 2008 supplemental session, the legislature authorized the use of cultural license plates revenues for marketing and promotion of the trust. This bill requests permission for continued use of this revenue for 10 years to continue to market the trust. Finally, one of the great accomplishments of the trust has been the development of cultural coalitions in every county and federally recognized tribe in Oregon. Trust practice each of these cultural coalitions must have an approved cultural plan in place in order to receive grant funds from the trust. House Bill 2740 clarifies that requirement. Colleagues, I urge your support of House Bill 2740, which will strengthen this wonderful and unique organization. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
And some people were asking me why I would vote against this, and so I just wanted to stand up and explain, and it's absolutely no offense towards the good representative from West Lynn. I think it's a nice program, and I know this is just simply expanding the membership, but I think we should be thinking about our priorities, think about maybe even contracting the membership, privatizing it or whatever. But we have rapists out there who need to be caught and put in jail. We have second graders and third graders that can't read. We have lots of people who have nowhere else to turn except for the state for their basic care. And I think we just need to be thinking about, even though art's nice, we just have to think about our priorities. Thanks.
Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if the carrier would yield to a question.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Depends on the question, but yes.
He does.
Which I didn't know beforehand.
Well, we had a little discussion yesterday, and I guess I just wanted to verify, you know, in the rebalance bill, there was a raid made on this trust, and I guess that has caused an issue of trust. Is there anything in this bill that assures us that this trust will not be raided further?
Mr. Speaker, Representative, that's a great question. There actually was some discussion with this bill earlier on about amending it to put in some prohibitions from a future fund sweep. It was decided for various reasons that we would leave this bill as it is to just expand the current workings of the trust and to strengthen the board.
Representative Kenemer.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
I'm going to support this, but I just think, you know, we need to be very careful that trust funds stay trust funds.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bruin, do you wish to close?
Very quickly, Mr. Speaker, just to comment on the comments by the good representative from Kaiser, and of course I agree with everything she said. I think the fundamental point with this bill, part of it is the board expansion. Colleagues, you need to know that of that seven-person board, two of those are legislators, a representative, that's me on the House side, and a senator. Unfortunately, those of us in elected office spend an awful lot of time raising money for ourselves. That's one of the negative parts of this job. What this board needs are people that aren't, frankly, raising money for themselves and spending all their time. This board needs active members to help the board raise money, especially in these critical economic times. Fundraising on the board has never been more important. And because, frankly, and I'll admit, they're not getting that sort of fundraising support from the legislative members, they need to add the additional members that are not legislators so these people can go out and actively solicit the community for the much-needed contributions to the board. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. House Bill 2740, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2956, related to interstate bridges.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2956. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Oregon Revised Statute 381 governs the construction, acquisition, and maintenance of interstate bridges under state jurisdiction between Washington and Oregon over the Columbia River and between Idaho and Oregon over the Snake River. House Bill 2956 specifies that requests for proposals and bid invitations related to interstate bridges between Oregon and Washington and Oregon and Idaho under state jurisdiction include provisions including compliance with applicable laws related to environmental protection, worker health, and employment of apprentices, preference for procuring products and materials fabricated in Oregon and Washington for bridges between those states, and Oregon and Idaho for bridges between those states. Ability to recycle materials used or the use of recycled materials and proximity of fabrication materials to the bridge site. Folks, we're going to be doing a lot of transportation projects. We're going to do one great big one up by where I live, 12-lane bridge with the ability to walk and ride and max. And I want to make sure, and I hope you agree with me, that we make sure that we do all we can to purchase everything necessary as locally as possible. Thank you very much. Good bill. Urge your vote.
Further discussion. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, initially I had concerns about the legalities of the preferences. This wasn't any hidden animosity toward Idaho. Those concerns have been resolved, and I'll be voting for the bill.
Representative Thatcher.
I just need to declare a potential conflict.
Say your conflict.
I have significant financial interests in companies that could possibly respond to the request for proposal and bid, et cetera, as outlined in the bill.
So noted for the record. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close?
It may only make clear, Mr. Speaker, that I said a 12-lane bridge.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bruin, how do you vote? Bruin votes aye. House Bill 2956, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. One additional bill, colleagues. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that House Bill 3021A be carried over to its proper place on Monday, May 4th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3076, relating to talented and gifted programs and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3076. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. House Bill 3076 is a housekeeping matter. State law already requires school districts to actually develop written plans, including plans regarding the talented and gifted students. Because of a quirk in the law, the Department of Education does not think it has the authority to review TAG plans submitted from school districts. So the bill will require school districts to actually submit the plans that they already are required to come up with for TAG students and submit them to the Superintendent of Public Education. It also permits school districts to apply for state funds for TAG programs by submitting an application to the Superintendent of Public Education. It will create greater transparency as to TAG programs. It will allow Department of Education to be proactive in analyzing and assisting districts with their TAG programs, and it will allow the Department of Education to serve as a resource for districts as to what TAG plans are successful in other districts. This bill passed House Education Committee unanimously, and it just may cost the district simply a stamp or the cost of electricity for emailing it, so it has no cost, very little cost. So I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, this is my third session and the third session to have TAG bills, and I'm glad that the good representative from Milwaukee wanted to be a sponsor on this bill, too. Colleagues, a short comment. This is a group of students that really deserve our attention, and they get overlooked in the education process, the funding and bills. Please vote for this bill. We need to do more for these special students. Thank you.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is a good bill, and I rise briefly to thank my constituent, Margaret DeLacy, who has spent countless hours over many sessions working on behalf of our talented and gifted students. I've been looking for Margaret, and I can't see her. If she's in the side aisle, would she please stand up and raise her hand? I don't see her. She should be here, because she has almost lived in the Capitol trying to support this bill. We expend many hours and dollars working to make sure low-achieving students perform up to their potential, and we need to make sure that we challenge our high-achieving students, too. Thank you, Margaret DeLacy, for your diligence in supporting these students. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Weiner, are you in the queue for this bill? House Bill 3076, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. For what purpose are you in the queue, Representative Weiner?
Request consent to return to courtesies.
Representative Weiner requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, sorry about that. I'd like everybody to recognize up in the gallery, we have Bethel Baptist or Bethel Christian School that's coming in from McMinnville. The group leaders, Janet Stubing, Bethel currently has an enrollment of 168 students, 15 faculty and staff serving preschool through eighth grade students. I'd like to welcome them to the Oregon Legislature. Bethel Christian School seeks to educate students from a biblical perspective, to challenge students to excel in academics, and to encourage students to maintain healthy social and emotional attitudes. If you could welcome them to the Capitol today, I would appreciate it.
Welcome to your Capitol. Good to have you here. Further courtesies, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we mentioned Elders in Action earlier, but I see that I've got a good friend up here in the gallery with some other friends from Gresham. So I'd like to just welcome Lorraine Griffey to the Capitol, and thanks very much for all your work with Elders in Action and all your input. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome. Any further courtesies while we're here? Okay, returning to third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3085, relating to closure of manufactured dwelling park and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3085A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a fairly simple bill. House Bill 3085A. You'll remember, many of you will remember anyway, last session we passed a fairly large bill that had a number of protections, a state floor, that is, for protections for manufactured home park tenants living in manufactured home parks that were undergoing a closure of that park. As a part of that bill, we grandfathered in existing ordinances that went above and beyond the state floor that we set. We also then, as a part of that bill, preempted any further changes to local ordinances. Unfortunately, there are some technical changes that need to be made to some of those local ordinances, but state law preempts even technical changes being made. So we've brought this bill, which would create a window of time in which those local jurisdictions that already have an ordinance in place can make those changes between the date of passage of this bill and January 1st of 2010 of this bill. That's the bill in a nutshell. I urge your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Greenlink votes aye. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan votes aye. House Bill 3085A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3157, relating to juvenile detention facilities.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3157A. Representative Huffman.
Speaker. Colleagues, I apologize for taking your time on the floor this morning for a local fix bill, but it's necessary. North Oregon Correctional Facility was started 10 years ago with a consortium between Hood River, Wasco, Sherman, and Gillam counties. At that time, in statute, the four sheriffs were given control over the adult part of the facility, but there was nothing put in statute for the juvenile directors because NorCor is also a juvenile detention center. This bill merely is a technical fix to give the juvenile directors the authority to work together to direct the juvenile detention part of NorCor. Thank you for your aye vote today.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Huffman, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, Mr. Speaker, thank you. It truly is a bill that only affects NorCor. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Riley votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Representative Olson votes aye. Representative Holvey? Representative Holvey's off the floor. House Bill 3157A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2137, relating to protective proceedings.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2137A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2137 provides immunity from civil liability for individuals and entities when protected information is disclosed in good faith and with reasonable grounds in connection with protective proceeding. This bill allows the Department of Human Services to seek a protective order. There are times when swift action is required to protect the safety of vulnerable Oregonians. The current statute limits the department's ability to share the results of an adult protective services investigation with the probate court for protective proceedings such as guardianship or conservatorship. These situations typically involve financial exploitation or lack of adequate care or food by those legally responsible and often involve egregious harm. Additionally, this bill would protect the person or persons making a referral to the Adult Protective Services with confidential information relating to a petition for guardian or conservative. In closing, according to Department of Human Services, national data reveals a substantial increase in case of financial abuse of seniors and people with disabilities. This bill allows Department of Human Services to work more closely with the court system in incidents where perpetrators have been identified during agency investigations. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. House Bill 2137A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2262, relating to reinstatement of charges after plea.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2262A. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a technical fix that passed out of Judiciary Committee without opposition. This bill applies to only a handful of situations that have arisen in which a plea agreement has been overturned on post-conviction relief, usually for ineffective assistance of counsel, but yet the statute of limitations has expired, and so the prosecutor cannot recharge them for the crimes. It is a good bill. It is a small and technical fix, and I urge its passage. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dembro, how do you vote? Dembro votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Reed votes aye. House Bill 2262A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. And you'll notice, colleagues, we have already moved 2539 over to next week. The chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 2676 be moved from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Tuesday, May 5th, 2009. So my request is for unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in order to do so. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2718, relating to women veterans' health care needs and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2718A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2718A is an important bill that is going to help us better serve women serving in the military who return to the state of Oregon. More and more women are stepping up to serve our country, and yet when they return home, they still find that they must seek services in a system that has been primarily built for men and the needs for men. This bill would create a task force that would study the unique needs of women veterans, and I'd like to point out two specific examples of the unique kinds of needs that these veterans have going unmet today. The first is the need for inpatient treatment, whether for service-induced mental illness or stress or drug rehabilitation. And although we do have in-state inpatient facilities for male returning veterans, there are no beds in the state of Oregon to serve women veterans, which means they must relocate out of state, away from their families, away from their children, in order to receive necessary treatment and support for service-related injuries. In addition, there's growing evidence that more and more women serving in the military are suffering from military sexual trauma. And so this task force also includes a representative from Services for Sexual Assault Victims, so that we can make sure that we are better responding to the needs of these brave women who have served our country and in the process have experienced rape or sexual assault. This is a very important bill that helps us meet the needs of our growingly diverse military. It's part of a large package of many bills that our House Veterans Affairs Committee is sending to us so that we can do our best and meet our moral obligation to support those who sacrifice so much to support all of us. It's a good bill, and I hope you will support it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we were pleased to hear this bill in the Veterans and Emergency Services Committee. The testimony was very compelling. I'd like to once again recognize the work of the Interim Task Force on Veterans Issues, who recognized the challenges in this particular arena, knew that it was something that they could not get to in the time frame that they had. Our committee stands fully committed to take up this issue in the interim, and I appreciate the good representative bringing us the bill. It truly is an issue that deserves our attention. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Reed votes aye. House Bill 2718A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2868, relating to child care facilities.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2868A. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues, and I would wish you good health, but I think it's too late. Anyway, House Bill 2868 comes to the floor from the Committee on Human Services with a unanimous due pass recommendation. House Bill 2868 requires DHS to provide orientations to new child care providers who are not registered or certified, but who receive funds from the department for child care services. Currently, all other categories of child care providers receive an orientation to help them become familiar with the DHS system and the requirements of providing child care in Oregon. When exempt providers receive an orientation under this bill, it will go a long way to help avoid confusion, especially in billing and payments, and bring up our level of child care. The department supports the bill and has told the committee that they currently have the capacity to give these added orientations. I thank you and ask for your aye vote on House Bill 2868.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Van Orman, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Cowan votes aye. House Bill 2868A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And you'll notice, colleagues, we've already moved over the next three items on the third reading calendar. The clerk will read the next bill after that.
House Bill 3097, relating to emergency medical personnel.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3097A. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3097A began as an effort and will end as an effort towards reciprocity for out-of-state paramedics to apply and obtain certification in the state of Oregon. You'll notice it says it'll require Department of Human Resources to adopt administrative rules taking into account experience in lieu of education for EMTs applying for certification by endorsement. What this does is encourages and works alongside DHS to put in the rules to allow for out-of-state paramedics to apply with reciprocity without having to obtain a two-year degree as required by state EMT paramedics now. The two-year degree is a requirement that Oregon is the only state that has that requirement currently. It's had the requirement for 14 years. They adopted that to be the leader. My suggestion is you're only a leader if there's people behind you. And right now, nobody is following the lead on this. Dr. Ritu Sani of DHS is a wonderful individual. We ended up with all stakeholders involved at the table, came to the conclusion that this was appropriate and necessary to address the issue that DHS has been addressing for quite some time. Specifically, as people say, do we really need to put into rules and have a bill that says what they will do and that they've agreed upon? And in this case, Dr. Sani answered that question by saying, we've discussed it for years, haven't done anything. This is a good swift kick to get us moving forward. So I urge your aye vote, and thank you for your time.
Further discussion. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Good colleague, have you ever driven a fire truck?
I've driven a fire truck and a fire engine. Yes, Representative.
Fire engine. Mr. Speaker, further question of the carrier.
Further question, do you yield?
I do, Mr. Speaker. In the interest of time, I'm excited.
Was that pretty sweet? Was it pretty cool?
Representative, I stand here before you and a group of folks I respect greatly, but I can tell you it's the greatest job in the world, and yes, it's pretty cool.
Further real discussion. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Absolutely,
he
Mr.
does.
Speaker.
Good representative, you will not find this question quite as happy because I have no desire to drive one of those trucks. My question is specific to this bill. All of us depend on the training of EMTs at a critical point. Do you feel with your knowledge of this industry, which is extensive, that this in any way threatens or diminishes the our confidence that when we need an EMT, we will get a trained EMT who is capable of doing the job that we expect of them?
Thank you for the question. Great question. And I assure you that the intent of this has never been to diminish or water down the integrity of the process for an EMT to become basic, intermediate, or paramedic. What this will do is, and again, we'll put in a rule, and that will be something we'll be working with DHS, fire chiefs, ambulance providers, all these folks, to determine what would be adequate in terms of years of service to recognize that as foregoing the two-year degree. What I will assure you now is that that two-year degree that's required by the state can be in any field. The National Registry Paramedic, one of the things that we're very aware of is that somebody could theoretically be a medic in the state of, let's just say, Colorado. They could be an EMT paramedic licensed to the National Registry of EMT Paramedics and never once touched a patient for 5 years, as long as they went to the continuing curriculum every 2 years for recertification. That, to me, is not sufficient to forego the requirement in the state. We're looking for folks that have... These are specific to military veterans, those folks that have served in combat, medics, those folks that have served as EMTs responding, hands-on patient contact. And that's something Dr. Sani, myself, Dr. Higginson, again, a lot of fire chiefs, a lot of service professionals from AMR, and the ambulance providers will work out. And thank you for your question.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I appreciate this discussion from the good carrier. I think in reading this, I worried that, you know, lessening sort of credentialing might be at work here, and it's the integrity and quality of these folks that I want to maintain, and I think the good carrier has answered my question very well. Thank you. I will support the bill.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. And I do apologize. The way this bill first got drafted, you probably received a lot of email from those folks that are EMS providers in your community that were concerned about what are we trying to do in fast-tracking a system that relies so heavily. We rely on those professionals to respond. Keep in mind that when you're going to go buy tires or you're going to go buy batteries or you're going to go buy whatever product it is out there, you can ask your friends, you can ask folks you know in the community, where should I go, and go on referral. When you pick up on the phone and dial 911, you get what you get. And it is my desire to make sure that we continue that service at its highest level, and that's why I'll continue to follow this through the process of rules. Thank you very much, and I urge your aye vote. Thanks for your time.
Representative Boone, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Sergeant-at-Arms reminds me I might have to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your potential conflict.
I'm a member of a fire department, volunteer fire department, volunteer EMT, as is a member of my family.
So noted for the record. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 3097A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3103, relating to practice of pharmacy.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3103A. Representative Thompson.
Colleagues, 3103A is a housekeeping bill for the Board of Pharmacy. It simply updates the pharmacy control statutes to reflect current practice. A couple of things that it does, it allows a physician to convey a prescription to a pharmacy electronically and to list on there a do not substitute for generic drugs for brand name drugs. Right now, that has to be done in writing, which gets in the way of our movement toward electronic health records and electronic prescribing. brings that into the 20th century. There is one line in here, though, that has caused some consternation. Authorize the State Board of Pharmacy to adopt rules approving dispensing drugs by vending machine. That can be easily misconstrued. There are some beta testing programs going on in other parts of the country, and this simply says that if we are to entertain the idea of dispensing drugs in this state by vending machine, then that falls under the purview of the State Board of Pharmacy, who must establish rules for that behavior. As far as I know, we don't have any dispensing machines coming to a parking lot near you right away, but it's simply part of the future. It's a good bill, nothing controversial in it. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thompson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. House Bill 3103A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
H.J.R. 43, recognizing importance of Oregon small businesses to Oregon economy.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of H.J.R. 43. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. As the son of a small business owner, as a former general manager and minor interest owner of a small business myself, and the husband of a current small business owner, I have long recognized the value added to our state and local communities by the hard work of Oregon's small business community. That is why I was excited to work with Oregon's Small Business for Responsible Leadership and NFIB to bring you this resolution that recognizes the value of Oregon's small business community. So be it resolved by the Legislative Assembly of this state that we, the members of the 75th Legislative Assembly, declare that Oregon small businesses deserve to be recognized as stakeholders and key contributors to a healthy and prosperous economy in this state. That Oregon small businesses have a right to equal access to economic development tools. That Oregon's small businesses have a right to access an economic culture that encourages and sustains the growth of small businesses. That Oregon's small businesses have a right to due consideration when the economic impact of statewide policies and state legislation is being considered. That Oregon's small businesses have a right to equal treatment by state agencies that provide critical infrastructure services in the Oregon economy, including access to education and technical assistance in starting and operating a business, access to information necessary to assist businesses in managing their relationships with state government, and access to clear, stable, and predictable regulatory and record-keeping requirements. And finally, that Oregon small businesses deserve and hereby receive the commitment of the 75th Legislative Assembly to strive to adhere to the objectives set forth in this resolution and to take the small business economy that the Legislative Assembly represents into account in considering and enacting legislation. It's a good resolution. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick. Try again, Representative Greenlick.
Question of the character.
Why don't you try the one of the nearby desks?
Can I just holler?
Representative Matthews' desk.
Let's try this one. A question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I apologize, sir. I haven't had a chance to ask you this question, but I'm interested in the question of rights. Is this a human right we're talking about here in the rights of small businesses? Is it a a constitutional right? And are there any responsibilities on somebody's part that goes with the granting of a right to small businesses? And perhaps I can ask this question of some other gentleman instead of you, if you'd prefer.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick. I think that is a very fair question, especially given your legislative history advocating for certain very important rights of Oregonians. And this resolution would be, it would be a philosophical statement of a right that I frankly would not argue is inalienable, probably doesn't rise to that level, but a right that we as a legislature are saying we ought to consider, the role of small business in our economy. And growing the economy isn't just about attracting big business. Our economic development tools are not just about big corporations, but it's about the mom and pops. It's about the entrepreneurs, and it's about the next great idea that could become something really big here in Oregon.
Representative Greenlick.
Mr. Speaker, I wonder if the representative from West Lynn would yield to a question.
Question of the representative from West Lynn. Does he yield?
I do, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
I wonder, sir, if you could put the rights of small business in this in the context of your perspective on rights. I know we've had conversations on the floor about this.
Well, if the question is, Mr. Speaker, do I think this rises to the level of a constitutional right and an inalienable right and a God-given right, the answer is, and I think the good representative from Eugene-ish got it right when he said that it probably doesn't rise to the level of inalienable rights. Little caught off guard with the question, but if this is the question, if to pull in with the question of health care, I do think that health care is an absolute responsibility. Does it rise to the level of a God-given right? I'm not convinced.
Representative Greenlick.
Yes, I wonder if I could ask the representative from East Clackamas a question.
Question of the representative from East Clackamas. Question of Representative Barton. Do you yield?
I do.
I'm sorry, yes. Sir. I just heard you expound elegantly on the nature of rights. How does the right to small business have in this resolution compare to your perspective of what's a right?
In the privilege queue, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Germaneness to the issue.
I'm sorry, restate, Representative Maurer.
Germaneness.
I'll be happy to answer
questioning
that.
Questioning to germaneness.
Representative Greenlick, please yield for just a moment.
Yes, sir.
Any member can choose to yield or not yield for questions of the carrier. The questions are related to the rights of small businesses. I would encourage us to keep both questions and answers and statements focused on the subject matter before the bill.
I'm almost done, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, thank you.
Do you have an additional question, Representative Greenlick? Or
no, I asked Representative Barton.
Oh, Representative Barton, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with sorry to further confuse things, but I was caught somewhat off guard. Can you repeat the question, please?
Clarification.
Yes, and let me preface it. We have a resolution in front of us.
Representative Greenlick, if you could just state it as a question, please.
The question is, I wonder if you could comment on the nature of rights with respect to granting small business in this resolution some rights.
Thank you for the question. I personally, our society, we essentially reflect, I suppose, the values of the post-English Enlightenment and John Locke in particular, which our society is predicated on the rights and liberties of individuals. Certain inalienable rights, for example, as Thomas Jefferson discussed in the Declaration of Independence, each individual have rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Locke said life, liberty, and property. That is how we structure our society for better or for worse. Now, there are many other cultures that do it differently. certain, for example, indigenous communities talk about literally rights of the community. And that is something, that there are compelling arguments behind it, but for better or for worse, we are a nation of individuals. And it is it's that tension between collectivism and individualism is, I suppose, one of the great pressure points in all of society. It created the greatest atrocities in human history, I would argue, and certainly in the 20th century. I don't necessarily know if that's what this resolution is referring to in the rights of small businesses. We are not a nation in the literal sense of small businesses, but a nation of individuals, constitutionally speaking. But I think colloquially speaking, it might be argued that small businesses are comprised of individuals. And
Representative Greenlink.
Thank you very much. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
I hope you... Thank you. Did somebody shut me off? No, they're here.
Not intentionally, Representative.
Very useful to me. I mean, I love small businesses, and I really want to make sure small businesses thrive in this state, and I'm going to vote for this. But we've had discussions on this floor about what rights mean and what obligations those rights imply, and I just wanted to make sure that I was getting the benefit of some experts that have helped me consider before. So I strongly support this resolution, and I think rights come from wrongs, and I think the perspective that small businesses haven't had an equal shot in our society to large businesses does generate a set of rights for small businesses because they're important to the health of our state. And when you have a wrong that needs to be corrected by a right, I think this means the state has some obligation to help small businesses compete, because I think the nature of our society requires small businesses to be strong and vital and to have an equal chance. I just wanted to make sure that's what we were talking about, that by establishing this right, we create an obligation for the state to do what's necessary to encourage and support small businesses, and I support that and urge you all to join with me. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, you wish to close.
Very briefly, Mr. Speaker, anything else that I could say on this resolution, which I anticipate will perhaps pass unanimously, would be quite anticlimactic at this point, and so it's time to vote.
Those who have the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. H.J.R. 43, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 543 relating to special motions to strike. Senate Bill 560 relating to dissolution of county service districts. Senate Bill 570 relating to commerce and metal and metal property. Senate Bill 610 relating to approved transportation costs and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 623 relating to water utility metering. Senate Bill 689 relating to highways. Senate Bill 745 relating to attorney fees and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 748 relating to tax supervising and conservation commissions. Senate Bill 901 relating to benefit plans for education district employees and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 929 relating to the billing of tenants for water.
Bills read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in order to allow Representative Olson to change his vote on House Bill 2589. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Nolan requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules to allow Representative Olson to vote on to change his vote on House Bill 2589. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Olson, how do you vote?
No.
Olson votes no. Oh. Further announcements? Representative Nolan?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. House Democrats will caucus at 12 o'clock in the caucus room. Bring your lunch.
Further announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will caucus immediately after floor session.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, our Human Services Committee will be meeting at 8:30 tomorrow morning. We're going to be having a public informational hearing on swine flu. I've invited everybody from the House and also from the Senate who might want to attend, and that will be in Hearing Room D, 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Representative Nolan, do you have an additional announcement? No. You're in the queue, just making sure. Let me just note, colleagues, an email went from the chief clerk to all of our offices yesterday noting the floor session schedule. You'll want to make special note that we are meeting tomorrow, Friday, at 10:15 a.m. for floor session. We are meeting tomorrow, Friday, at 10:15 a.m. for floor session. And then on Monday, you'll want to make a special note, the floor session on Monday will begin at 8:30. Basically go from 8:30 a.m. Monday morning to all the way through until lunchtime. So I believe all of our morning committees are not meeting on Monday morning, so you should not have a committee conflict. But please make those special notes, Friday 10:15, Monday at 8:30. And I would encourage you, as we're dealing with this wave of bills that have come out of committees in the last few days, I'd encourage us all to the degree possible to keep our evenings, especially for next week, as flexible as possible. We may get through things on the floor. The floor sessions have been very productive this week, and we've got through the bills we needed to, but we definitely want to get those House bills over to the Senate so action can begin anew. Any further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the Dissertation Review Committee, made up of the representative from the Oregon's Christmas Tree District and myself, have been reviewing and evaluating the representative from East Clackamas County's dissertation on John Locke, the Enlightenment and the Age of Reason. And we, under a number of different categories, preparation, we felt a B. He seemed a little caught off guard by the subject matter. Clarity, B, always. Confidence, B, he seemed a bit hesitant. Enthusiasm, A, he's very eager to share his knowledge with us. And finally, knowledge of the subject, A+. We were very impressed, so we're going to pass him along.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We can all hope for grades that high. Colleagues, I want to talk just briefly about untreated addiction in this state. You know, as of April 1st, the Oregon Department of Corrections inmate population profile showed that 59% of prison inmates have severe substance abuse problems. And the profile of community corrections population this last December showed that 38% of offenders in Multnomah County's correction system were there because of drug offenses. And that figure doesn't include other offenses in which drugs and alcohol were a contributing factor. The direct costs of these consumption-related crimes for law enforcement, corrections, and child welfare expenditures, we all know, they're high, including losses due to property damage. We're talking about almost $1 billion in 2006 alone, according to an EcoNorthwest study. Because we fund addiction treatment, this state funds addiction treatment at a level so far below the need. State-funded treatment for uninsured is rationed primarily to pregnant women, IV drug users, parents of children in foster care, and to offenders. So Oregonians are ready to get clean and sober. They're begging for treatment every day and being turned away until they commit a crime. And, colleagues, it just doesn't make sense. Treatment works. It's cheaper than the cycle of crime, arrest, conviction, incarceration, and parole that's perpetuated by untreated addiction. Now is the time to spend smarter. And the smart money in this state is on addictions prevention, treatment, and recovery.
Further remonstrances, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise to talk about what we just had a resolution for, House Joint Resolution 43. And as this resolution came around to me earlier in the session, I had a hard time even signing on to it. And I'll tell you why. Because I've always believed this and always will believe this, that my actions speak much louder than anything I write down on a piece of paper. And we need to remember that those small businesses out there truly need those things that are on this piece of paper. But I say today, how many days we are into the session, how many bills have we passed on this House floor that will truly help those small businesses expand jobs and help get people employed, keep people that are already employed, and help those people stay employed. Truly, colleagues, I encourage us today to go back, read the words again in that resolution. And as a small business person who is here, taking time away from a business that, as at 5:30 this morning in downtown Portland in one of my restaurants, trying to help those people be successful so they can continue on to employ people, I understand what we do here in this building that impacts small businesses. And I hope you will read those words and that you will really think about what the words mean on that piece of paper. Rights or no rights?
Are there further remonstrances? Seeing none, Representative Tomei, adjournment.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until Friday, May 1st at 10:15 a.m.
Representative Tomei moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Friday, May 1st, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.